And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is March 13th, 5:14 p.m. You are now listening to the Pastor Spot, excuse me, a radio ministry of Community Christian Fellowship. And I'll turn it over to your host, Pastor Steve Whitaker. Hello, Pastor.
Hey, how are you? It's good to be here again this evening.
Thank you.
Glad you've tuned into the Pastor Spot. It is a ministry of Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio. And tonight we're going to have an interesting discussion. I do want to mention, though, before we discuss, I mentioned this last time, that if you would like to call in at any time, I'd be glad to field any questions. That number is 740-383-9944. I do want to tell you ahead of time, though, we have open discussion here and we have pleasant discussion. So if anyone would ever call in with some negativity, they might find themselves just cut off pretty quick. So this is a positive show, I'm certainly representing the church, and I want to represent that with all the love that I can. So we'll just keep that simple, okay? Great to talk to everyone tonight. We talked a lot about a few subjects since we've been on here. I know that we talked a little bit about the school situations with the shootings and whatnot, and I was talking to someone the other day, and they said, you know, you spent about 2 weeks on a similar subject. You going to talk about something different this week? And I said, well, sure I am. And what I'd like to talk about is something that gets to the root, I think, of a lot of the problems that we have in our country today and even around the world, and that's family relationships. And we have certainly seen a decline in family relationships in the last 40 or 50 years, and there's a lot of factors that I believe bring that on. Just a lot of things demographically even that have changed. One thing I've really noticed as I look through the history of the church that we're in, the building we're in was built in 1874, and I was blessed to come across a copy, all the copies of the church records going all the way back to 1874. And I found that the family units were close, and people didn't travel too much. And one of the things that it has caused a bit of a change in our society is we can be anywhere in a minute. If we can't be there physically, we can certainly pick up a phone. We can pick up get on the computer. We can get on our cell phones, whatever. We can be anywhere instantly, and news travels at the same speed. And it used to be, clear back to Bible times, you had a completely different group in the city than you did in the rural areas. Small towns had all the necessities they needed, and they kind of were closed within a certain area. The churches were the same way. Well, as modern travel has come about and modern communication, everybody's everywhere. So people don't seem to stick around too much. I'm a very, very blessed person. I have four children that all live within the farthest one's 20 minutes away. And so all my grandchildren are close. But that's a real rarity today. And I've been very much blessed by that. But in most families that I talk to, their children that are grown are in any part of the United States or out of it. I mean, they're all over the place. And it's because we live in a society now that travels. And we didn't always do that. And that has led to a bit of the breakdown of the family. One thing that I've found with young people today that's a little bit different is they don't seem to have the sense of family history. Family's not in, they don't want to know, well, what did grandpa do? Or what did great grandpa do? Or where did you guys come from? Or, you know, where was our family originally from? And I found that, I've worked with teenagers for years, and I found that as I ask these questions, they're clueless. Because it just doesn't hold the same importance. The nostalgia is not there. The sense of family and family history and tradition has seemed to have left. And it's just so many different things going on. So that definitely, I feel, has had an impact on the closeness of families and how they react and relate to one another. And of course, when that happens, then you don't have a lot of the family, what we call family values, that are passed down from generation to generation. And it wasn't that way just 60, 70 years ago. I mean, whether good values or bad values, families pass down family values. And you could usually tell at school if somebody was related to a particular family just by things they did, the way they talked, and those type of issues. But not so much today. Another thing that I think has brought us to this is we have a sky-high divorce rate. And, you know, I would never be disparaging towards anyone that has ever been divorced. It's a hard thing to go through, and it's difficult for families. Many times it's more difficult for the children, and they're kind of left in the wake of the mess. And sometimes there's three or four marriages in a family. Sometimes there's just all kinds of dynamics that we didn't used to see. And kids don't feel as secure. They don't feel as protected. They don't feel like they have that close family unit that they can rest in. And I remember when my children were little, I'd throw one of them up in the air and they just laugh and giggle because they knew Dad was going to catch them. And today, not that a father couldn't do that, because I'm sure they do, but what I mean is kids don't feel that there's that safety net there as much anymore. And because of that, they fall into other things. They don't want to listen. They don't trust. A lot of those things happen. But I want to go back to something, and when I talk about this, this is one passage in the Bible that probably gets more disparaging remarks than about any passage in the Bible. And I think it's because it's not understood. You can go anywhere in the Bible and take two or three verses by themselves and create your own outcome of what that you think it says. You can make it fit anything. The truth is, what we have to do is we have to look at what precedes it, what follows it. We've got to take it in context, right? Because anything that you do or you come up with without a context becomes a pretext and it doesn't fit. Well, the first time that, as a pastor, that I had someone say something to me about this particular passage was I was getting ready to do a wedding. And one of the bride's relatives, I think it was the mother or maybe an aunt, came up and she said, "I don't care how you do this wedding, but I don't want to hear anything about that submissive stuff." And I just kind of chuckled because, you know, that's in our society today, to hear that a wife's to submit to a husband, it's like, whoa, 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 you know, we're equal. You know, we're not going to, we're not going down that road, you know. And we instantly get in our mind the picture of the domineering man, and Hollywood likes to take us back anything that's prior to 1960, that the guys wore what they call the wife beater t-shirts and laid around, sit around drinking beer and screaming at the wife to do their every... Well, that's not what I grew up in. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, as I believe when I grew up in the 60s and 70s, most moms were stay-at-home moms, and they loved their role. And I can remember my mother having friends over after in the summertime, because during school years I wouldn't know what she did. But in the summer, her friends would come over shortly after things got moving in the morning, and they'd sit and talk and have coffee and just have wonderful times together and built great relationships. And then there was a time when they would clean the house or cook or dinner or do whatever. But it was not a bad life. I'm not saying there's a thing wrong with women that work. I think it's wonderful when they do. And God designed us all differently to do different things. But somewhere in the 80s and 90s, women that stayed home kind of got a bad rap as not really being doing what they could do. And I think that we need to understand that that's a wonderful role if that's what they can possibly do too. Because, you know, God loved women so much and continues to do so, that in giving them the role of the nurturer, that shows his love in itself. Because when you think of it, a child's character and their personality and who they are is developed in the very young years of their life, not the older years. And when you have the mother there that's guiding and training and bringing up that nurturing to make that person who they are, it shows you how important God felt the role of the mother was and in what she did. It wasn't a secondary role. I guess old caveman dad just had to go home out and make some money and drag it home, but mom is actually the one that got the very important role of doing that early teaching and nurturing. And so we need to really think about how we really look at a picture. But I'm going to start in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 22. And boy, we're going to jump right into this right away, because right off the bat it says, "Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord." And boy, that'll raise some fire today, even in some churches, I'm sure. But here's what we have to look at. Then it says, "For the husband is head of the wife, as also Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body." Now, the picture that's being drawn there is a picture of order. It's not a picture of anyone being better than anyone else or anyone lording over someone else. It's a picture of order. As Christ said, he's the head of the church. He had a picture there that the church looks to Christ for guidance and for what's to be done. And in this same picture, you know, the father was to take the role biblically as the person that in the household carried that mantle of responsibility to make sure the family was okay and to make the hard decisions. And unfortunately, I think in our society today, we don't see a lot of that. We do see it, obviously, and I certainly don't want to say anything negative about any good, solid fathers out there. But there's an awful lot of kids out there that don't have a father in the home. And there's a lot of, and even in the church, I mean, today it's changed so much that more women are bringing their children to church than fathers are bringing their children to church. So fathers have kind of stepped back from where they were intended to be in a lot of cases and in that particular area. So what it says is that Christ is Savior of the body. Now, wouldn't that tell me that the husband is supposed to be Savior of the family? He's there to defend the family. He's there to protect the family. He's there to make sure they're fed. He is there to make sure his wife's needs are met, not to lord over, not to order around. Next, it says, "Therefore, just as the church is subject to Christ, so let wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husband, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her." Now, there's where we almost should have started out, if we could flip this a little bit and say that before the submission part, because here's the thing. Christ loved the church so much that he willingly went to the cross for it. He willingly went to the cross for his people that would believe on him and have their sins covered. Now, I want to tell you something. If you're a man out there, and you're in a relationship with a woman, and you are literally willing to die for her, I mean, I'm not just talking hypothetical, I mean go right out and stand in front of a bullet for her, to suffer for her, always put her first and always hold her up, don't you think most women out there are going to trust you with decisions that are being made? You know why? Because you're putting her first. Why wouldn't they? See, this is what I mean about putting things into context. Let's go on here. "Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, and that he might present her to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, and that she should be holy and without blemish." Now let's look at this picture. God desired for women to be put up on a pedestal, and for man to put her there, and for the husband to hold her up, spotless, without blemish, as being his perfect, beautiful wife. He was supposed to protect her from things that would hurt her, guide her, be there with her, be her soulmate beside her, always putting her up, never wanting her to have to get down and take on the things that he had to take on. He wanted to hold her up as the precious person that she is. And that's what was biblically intended. And so when you start out a passage and it says, wives, submit to yourselves to your husbands, they immediately think, are you crazy? But wives, I want you to take a thought here and take a look at a man that does these things. I mean, isn't that the perfect man? Isn't that the knight in shining armor that every woman wants or would want? Well, if man was being what he should be, that's the way it would be. And it's a challenge to men, too, to be that way. So going on from that, it says, so husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church. So, as Christ nourishes and cherishes his body of believers, the church, we're supposed to nourish and cherish our wives. Their bodies are part of ours. You take care of them. To me, there's nothing worse in the world that I ever see than physical abuse in a household. You know, in the olden days, I think guys used to just take care of that, didn't they? Didn't they go knock on the guy's door and say, you know, heard your wife's been having a few problems, we're going to go out and have a discussion. And they discussed. And hopefully it stopped. But, you know, that's just one area. I really see that we've missed a great opportunity in America as cherishing our marriages. And another area that I want to go into in discussing that is to ask this question. If you're married to someone and all you want to do is please that person, that's your main desire is for their welfare and their happiness above anything and above all, and the other spouse, their desire in life above anything and everything else is to please you and for your welfare, why in the world would you ever leave each other? You wouldn't. That's the whole point. You wouldn't. And of course, having God in the center of your marriage, because he's the one that unites you both together and keeps you both in line to spend that time together, to pray together, to go to church together, or to be involved in raising your families with the values that are intended to keep families together. But think about that. Why would you ever want to leave someone that loved you that much? You wouldn't. And when you would think, say, well, yeah, but what if they go out and they have an affair? Am I going to go out and have an affair if all I want to do is hold my wife up and please her and make her unbelievably happy? There's no room for an affair. It wouldn't fit the equation. Am I going to want to for my wife to be sad and unhappy? Of course not. So why am I going to do things to make her sad and unhappy? I'm going to come home from work when I'm supposed to. I'm not going to stop at the bar on the way home and come stumbling in at 10 o'clock at night because that's going to hurt her. And wives, on the other hand, when husband does come in on time and he's been working and you've been working, meet each other with a smile and help each other get through the day and with the children. So, you know, there's an area that we have to start having respect in our marriages. And there's another thing that is crucial and key to this, is that marriage is not a civil agreement that says we're going to stay together and be together until we don't like it anymore, or until the love wears off. You've heard all these things. We just fell out of love. I don't know how you fall in and out of love. I know how you fall in love, but the problem we run into in a marriage is that in marriages today is a marriage is supposed to be a covenant, and it's a covenant between you, your spouse, and God. And when you look at it as a covenant, not just an agreement, what that covenant says is, and most of you have said this that have been married, essentially somewhere in the wedding ceremony, you're going to say that you won't part till death. I mean, we say it, but people don't always follow that. And if you go into it looking at this, no matter what happens, we're staying married. That's just a given. That's going to happen. We're going to have highs and lows. There's going to be days that she wants to kill me. And there may be a few days that I wouldn't mind it the other way around too, because that's just what it is when you're living with somebody. There's peaks and valleys. and you know, you go through a period of time with a spouse that, you know, you're just, oh, they're getting on my last nerve. You know, what am I doing in this marriage? And then you stick it out. And a month later, you're saying to yourself in a situation, I can't imagine living without them. You know, what would I do if they weren't here? And that's just it. We have to understand there's peaks and valleys in our life, and there's going to be a marriage. But if you go into a marriage and you say, you know what, no matter what, I'm sticking it out. That's what you do. You stick it out. Because when those tough times come, you figure out a way to get through them. You don't start looking for an exit window. And we've come to a part in our country today where most people are looking for an exit window when things get tough. Sometimes I tell couples that are having trouble, I'll try to bring them back to this point, and I'll say, I want you to just close your eyes for a minute and think about what it was about this guy or about this young woman that just made you fall in love with him. What was it that, think back, you know, go back to where you were. And, you know, they'll get to thinking a minute, and it's, usually I'll see someone start to crack a smile or get an eased look on their face. And I'll say, okay, let's just go back. Go back there. You know, there's no reason to continually hold and harbor ill feelings when you have problems in a marriage. If someone has the commitment, they're going to make it right with you, whether it's a husband or a wife. You help each other get through it. And if you constantly bring it up or throw it up in their face, you know, that's not getting through it. That's not showing love. Because if my spouse say that they had an extramarital affair and there was a breakdown in the marriage and we reconciled and got together and got back together and decided we're going to work this thing out, they're going to be hurt by that affair. The very person that did it, it's going to hurt them, because now they're in their relationship and they wish they'd never done it and they feel guilty. Now you're supposed to be the one that loves them. If you love them, are you going to tell them that I want you to hurt so bad that I'm going to keep bringing this up? No. If you love them, you don't want them to hurt. You want to put it behind you. You want it to be gone. See, it's all about whether you really love someone or whether you really love yourself. If you love someone, you're going to want the best for them. You're going to be concerned about their feelings. You're going to be concerned about their welfare, their heart, and where they're going. And that means all you can do as a husband and wife is to build and lift each other up. You grow together in a marriage. I was married in February. My wife Shirley and I celebrated our 40th wedding anniversary. Now, I'm really not that old. We got married, I mean, right out of high school. I mean, we hit the ground running hard. And, you know, so many people said, man, that's not going to last. I'll give them 2 years. I'll give them 6 months. And, yeah, it was rocky. It was rough in a lot of ways. Finances. Raising a young family, we had our kids right away. Raising a young family, I was very immature in a lot of ways. We probably both were. But I think at the worst time in our marriage after a few years, when I really considered maybe I shouldn't be in this marriage. I remember coming home one day, remember exactly where I was. And, you know, people say, well, you don't audibly hear God say anything. But I'll tell you something. He hammered it on my mind so hard that it might as well have been audible. And said, suck it up, buddy. This is your family. You got to see this thing through. And I did. And I realized right then and there, this can be a great marriage and a great family, but I've got to take the responsibility for it. And if she has a hard time coming along for a while because I've been such a jerk, that eventually she's going to see that I've got it together. And she did. And she probably thought the same thing about me. I don't know. But the point is, we decided that it was going to work. And today I can happily say that I have children that are happily married, and they have wonderful families, and they're solid, well-grounded families. And why is that? It's because... well, two reasons. I'll get to one in a minute. But the first one I want to say is this. I made a conscious decision what direction my family was going to go at some point. If we would have split up right then and our kids been split in different areas, I don't know what would have happened or how they had turned out. But I made a conscious decision that my family had to come first, above my wants and my needs. I wear this bracelet. I love these rubber bracelets. I mean, you can put anything you want on them, and they wear them in the shower and whatnot. This one says on here, I am second. It's a good reminder, isn't it? It means you always put someone else before yourself in everything. It works out pretty well that way, to be honest with you. It's a lot more satisfying to put other people first than putting yourself first all the time. And you have people that care about you more, I think, when you behave that way. But I decided that I was going to be last. My family was going to come first. And it's worked out extremely, extremely well. Another thing that I did that was quite interesting, I tell people this. And when my children were born, one of the first things I did, and this was right in the labor room when they were born, and you know how anyone that's ever been in one, you know that's a high-stress situation. I think the second one in, I was sitting on a round, like a bar-type stool, and about fell off when the baby was born. I just got dizzy, and away I went. But anyway, first thing I did was I realized with my children, this is way more than I can handle. It's a lot of responsibility to raise a child. And I said to God, I said, Lord, I said, I want to tell you something. I can't do this. You take them. You guide them. Let me try to be the father I can be and help me, but these kids belong to you. And I meant that. And what I meant by that was it was far greater than anything I could do on myself. Which leads me to where I want to go next. Raising our children today is far greater, mom and dad, dad and mom, aunt and uncle, grandparents, who's ever raising these kids, brother, sister, is far more than you can do by yourself. Don't even attempt it. We live in families now where there's usually two incomes that are needed. Kids are subjected to so many things that I never saw growing up or even thought that I would. What do you do? What do you do when you can't be there for hours a day during the summer when they're there? What do you do when they're up in the room and they've got the computer on and you're not sure what they're watching? What do you do when a friend knocks the door and wants them to go somewhere with them and you don't know them? What do you do when they come home and they want to go to someone's house for the weekend and you don't know the parents? There's a lot of what do you do's there, isn't there? And the list can go on and on. First thing I'd like to say is, I know I'm a pastor and you're going to say, here he goes. Mom and Dad, why aren't your kids in Sunday school? You know, in church, they're going to get those lessons. And maybe they will not listen. Maybe they won't listen. Maybe they'll still go through bad spells. Maybe they'll go through a time where they run away from everything they've been taught. I certainly did. But you know what? In the back of my mind, I knew there was something better. And I learned it from my mother. I learned it from my family. I learned it from my father. And I learned it in Sunday school. I learned those values and always knew there was something better than where I was at. And we're not subjecting our kids to that today. They don't know there's something better. You see, one thing that the Word of God does and the Bible does and bringing kids up in church is it gives them hope. Because I always knew no matter what trouble I got in, if I just get my act together, you know, God was going to be there with me and things could have had a chance to be better. I'm really getting tired of seeing all these teen suicides. And I'll tell you, being a EMT chaplain, aside from being a pastor, I've seen some things that you don't want to be on. And they're not very old, and it's heartbreaking. But I sit back and I think about these things. What's different? What is different now that when I was growing up, and many of you were growing up, we didn't see these things. I talked to a school board member yesterday that said, you know, we got in fights all the time at school when we were kids. He says, I was pretty wild myself, but I never thought about killing someone. So we've got people thinking about killing themselves, killing other people. Why? Because they don't have hope. Clear and simple. There's no hope. They don't see hope at home. Many times they are in broken homes. All they see is arguing. They don't have anything grounding them. They don't see that tomorrow's going to be any better than the day before. We raise their hopes so many times. We make them promises we can't keep because of our own lifestyle. Maybe we get in a new relationship and the kid thinks, well, maybe we're going to have a normal home now. And that lasts about 6 months. You know, it only takes about two or three of those cycles before kids just give up on hope and think, what's the point? I'm never going to have a normal home. And there's nothing to reach out for in the future. Things fall apart on them. You know, we give them trophies all the way through school now. We build them up. We pump them up. And they graduate from high school. And if they're not on a solid foundation, they drop. Now what do? Folks, our kids need a solid foundation. And it starts at home. It really, truly starts at home. We can blame anyone that we want, but it has to come home to roost. Dads, you got to be dads. Mom, you got to be mom. You don't always have to tell them yes. I think sometimes we feel so guilty about the time that we don't spend with them that we think that by letting them do whatever they want, they're going to be happy or be our friend. I see so many cases where people will flood their kids with gifts because they're guilty for the time they're not spending with them. Do you realize what that's doing? It's teaching them that they can buy affection. And nobody can buy affection. Remember the old Beatles tune, Money Can't Buy Me Love? It's pretty accurate. It doesn't. Because you just want more and more and more, and it's insatiable. It can't work. True love comes in the time that you spend and how much you care. Time's so much more important to these kids than what you buy them, what you take them to. And parents, I want to tell you out there today, it's far more important to be a parent than it is to be their buddy. Because it's kind of hard to discipline your buddies. And it's kind of hard to guide your buddies or tell them no or what they have to do or to put your foot down as the final authority. That comes from a parent. It truly does. And I think that's a lot of what we're missing today. Another area I want to go into that's very important today. I think we're too politically correct to some point, and I think what I mean by that, and I'm not talking about phrases and words and all that. What I'm talking about is we want to keep our nose out of everyone's business, which, you know, I don't want anyone's nose where it shouldn't be. But my point is, neighbor, when you see something wrong with one of your children in the neighborhood, don't be afraid to tell their parents. Which leads me to what the problem there is, because I witnessed it just the other day with a couple parents at an event. And a mother went over and corrected a couple kids that were acting up. Another mother saw what happened, and she went over and told the other mother, "You don't correct my kid," and she got irate with them. Parents, if somebody is looking out for the welfare of these children and of your kids, work with them, not against them. That's what we need to do. When the teacher calls and says, we got a problem, trust me, she didn't want to call you. Teachers do not like having their heads bit off, which in about 9 out of 10 cases, that's what happens when they call mom and dad. So trust me, if they call you, they're calling you because they finally really needed to, and there's a problem that needs dealt with. Now understand the teacher's role. Have a little bit of compassion for their position, They need to understand your position, and both of you come together and say, what can we do to fix this situation? It does a child no good when a teacher calls with an issue at school or an issue with how they're learning or what they're doing or not doing, and your child hears you in the background letting the teacher have it. Because the kid knows they just got away with whatever they were doing. And they'll continue to do it over and over and over again. I was raised in a generation, and you guys have heard this 100 times over, if I got in trouble at school, I got it twice as bad when I got home. And what that truly was that was my father and my mother reinforcing what the teachers were trying to do when they couldn't be there. And that's what was important. See, I had to know as a child that on both ends, they were going to work together. I wasn't going to play the teacher against my parents against the teacher. They weren't going to let that work. So I had to know that, you know, I just plain had to behave and do what I was supposed to because I was going to get it either once or twice, one of the two. So there's another area that we can work on. Work with your teacher. Let's go down another road, parents. Your kids will lie. Not my kid. Oh, yeah, your kid. I lied. I've never known a kid that doesn't lie. When they get backed into a corner, they lie. So if they're in trouble at school and they immediately tell you, I didn't do it, and the teacher's lying, please don't take the attitude that teacher's lying and just trying to get your child in trouble. The last thing she usually wants to do or he wants to do is get your child in trouble. If you've ever spent much time in a classroom, which you'll see that it's really great when things work and when they run normally. They do not want to take the time out of the day to get your child in trouble and add one more thing to the basket that they don't need. 10 to 1, maybe not always, but 10 to 1, if your child's in trouble, they probably did something wrong. Maybe not all the time, but it's worth a listen. It's worth being civil. And today, even so much more so. When I was in school, we had this thing called paddling. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think I ever got paddled that I didn't deserve it. And I probably slid by quite a few that I probably should have got. But we don't do that today. So all the more is a reason for the parent to be working with the teachers to best see the proper route of working with a child or the discipline or whatever is coming along. But all these areas, you think about what we've talked about here this evening. We've talked about marriage. We've talked about the role of the man, the role of the woman. It's your responsibility to raise your family, not your parents. And man, do I see a lot of that today. Grandma and Grandpa, I want to tell you something out there. I pray for you. I really do. Because as I get older, I realize I don't have the energy that I had when I was 20, 30 years old. I just don't. I don't have the patience. I don't have the stamina. And I know more parents today in their 50s and 60s that are raising their grandchildren. And it's hard on the kids and it's hard on them too. If you're going to have children, be responsible and take care of them. You don't have, it's not your right to go out every weekend and have a good time. I don't know where that came from either. I remember when our last child was born, Holly. Holly's only 33. Holly, if I messed up, I'm sorry. Anyway, I think Holly was 6 months old before we ever left the house together because she was our responsibility. And, you know, parents today, so many times, the weekend's the most important time. Everyone's working for the weekend. You know, find someone to watch the kids and we're gone. And then Sunday morning rolls around, your head's pounded, and you look in your purse and go, oh no, can we pay the electric? You know, I see it. I'm out there. I know what happens. And take that responsibility and do things as a family. You'll feel better about it. You really will. Nothing wrong with mom and dad going out and getting away. That's a necessity. They need to do that. But it doesn't have to be every weekend or twice a week or twice in the week. You wonder where the money goes. That's where it goes. That's where a lot of it goes. We've got to start pulling back a little bit and realizing what are some of the traditional family things we had and that we've lost them. But here's the whole thing. They're not permanently lost. They can be found again. And you can find them. Just make some decisions to do these things. You know, open a phone book. Find a church. Say this weekend we're going to church. If you don't like that one, go to another one. Until you find one where you're comfortable. You know, find a church. Dad, Mom say that, you know, one night a month is going to be just our night out. We're getting a babysitter. And it's not you and another couple. It's you two. Just do something together. Support one another. Don't tear each other down. You know, sometimes we think it makes us feel better to hurt someone so they can maybe feel the hurt that we're feeling. That is such a vicious cycle. Build each other up. Tell your husband he looks great today, even if he doesn't. Tell your wife she looks beautiful today. Can you just stop and tell each other you love each other once in a while? For no apparent reason. I mean, no motive. Just, hey, I love you. I want you to know that. You know, we're missing this stuff. Our kids don't hear this stuff out of our parents. This is where our society breakdown is. These kids that go into schools and do the things they do, they're emotionally fried. They are emotionally spent and bankrupt. Their souls are ripped out of them. They have no hope for the next day. And then we just want to talk about what are we going to do to prevent it. And it's always something material. Either more locks on the doors or don't ban this or ban that. No, it's called get your act together and raise a family. We didn't have these things years ago. It's because families were families and people took responsibility for what they are. And that's what we got to do if we're going to save the family in America, period. That's it. You know, I'm not telling you to come to my church. I love you too. I'm telling you to get your families, do something together positive. Go to church, do things together. Husbands out there, fall in love with your wife all over again. You can do that. Wives, do the same. You realize you can do that? You just got to make a decision. I'm going to save my family. And maybe I can't do it, but God's there willing to let you come to him at any time and say, you know what, God, I can't do this on my own. You're far greater than me. Will you please help me save this family? And he'll honor that. Scripture tells us that anyone that comes and knocks, he will in no wise cast out. So why don't you try knocking? Try finding out what it's like to have a happy family. You know, I don't know of any family that has ever had that first child. You see them at the hospital and they're all smiles and tears and the first baby. And when you look at them that first time, is there ever that thought that you're not going to be with them forever? Is there ever that thought that, well, this isn't going to work? No, it's a whole bunch of hope. This is Pastor Steve Whitaker wanting you to keep that hope alive. I want to tell you, folks, you can. You truly can. You know, I'm at 209 East Water Street in Prospect. Phone number is 740-494-2222. Our website is prospectccf.com. If you're struggling, give me a call. I'd love to help you get your family back together. Folks, that's where it is. That's where it's at. It's not about rules and laws. It's about us caring about each other enough to say, I'm going to win. My kids are going to win. My kids are important. Their emotional health is important, and I'm going to make sure it is. You know, I'm really glad that I'm able to do this show. It gives me the opportunity to share a lot of things with you that are really, really heavy on my heart. And families are. My country is. Marion is, Prospect is. You know, as I look out there, I know that you're an awful lot of people out there are hurting deeply, and I just don't want you to hurt. God bless you guys. Have a great week. Please tune in again tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Well, 3:15 is about when the program starts. If you want to hear it again tomorrow at 3:15, after that, I'll see you next week. And, of course, you can also look at WWGH and find us in the archives. Hey, love all of you, and God bless you.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, LP, Marion, Ohio. For legendary Emmy Award-winning actor, best known for his role